Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our super special guest is Rob Walling, the amazing co-founder of MicroConf, TinySeed, and previously Drip, and we're going to talk about product integrations today. This episode is brought to you by Gusto. Small businesses across the US love running payroll with Gusto. Why? Because Gusto automatically files and pays your taxes. It's super easy to use, plus you can add benefits and management tools to help take care of your team. Sign up today at gusto.com/UIbreakfast and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. Hi, Rob.
Hello. Thanks for having me on, Jen.
We're absolutely excited. So let's imagine there are people in our audience who don't know who you are. Can you tell us a bit more what you do and a little bit of your background story?
Sure. Yeah, so these days I run TinySeed, which is the first startup accelerator designed for people who would traditionally bootstrap. And we focus mostly on SaaS and subscription software. We give a bit of funding to folks getting started, and then a year's worth of remote mentorship, guidance, networking, intros, and all that. And I've been working on that for about a year, thinking about it for several years, but you know, I was at Drip, email marketing software, for many years before that. So that's what I'm doing these days, and we just launched our first batch of 9 companies, and I'm pretty excited to have that going. And then my background is as a software developer. And I worked for a lot of different companies and never really enjoyed being a salaried employee, and slowly moved my way to product income over the years. And it was about 10 years ago, 10 or 11 years ago, that I, you know, eventually quit all consulting and salaried employment and was able to support myself full time from software products.
Awesome. Tell us a bit more about MicroConf and Drip, since we're going to be talking about your experience with integrations primarily from Drip, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. So I'll start with MicroConf, and then, because Drip will lead into the conversation. MicroConf is it's the conference for self-funded startups, and my co-host Mike Tabor and I launched it in 2011, and we've been doing it so for about 8 or 9 years. We've done it 18 times, I believe, because we do it 3 times a year now.
Oh,
twice in the U.S. and once in Europe. It's going to be in Croatia here in just a couple of months, and then back to the U.S. Next spring. And so we get, you know, in the U.S. we get about 450 people who come together and talk about all this stuff, you know, like we're going to talk about today. And and then that kind of feeds in to Drip, which is a software as a service application I started in 2012. We broke ground on code, and later sold that with my co-founder, sold it to Lead Pages in 2016. And then I left there just about a year ago at this point. But Drip was the largest and the fastest growing company/SaaS product that I had worked on. So it was quite a fun journey.
That's awesome. I think it's a bit too late to give congratulations on the acquisition, but it was spectacular. We've been watching and cheering up from the sidelines.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So tell us a bit more about Drip. We're going to talk about product integrations. So that means that you, as a platform, get to work with other software product and get the work together. So how did integrations play into Drip's product strategy?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, it was a big part of our growth was doing these integrations. And I had done this prior to Drip. It wasn't just Drip, but I had a invoicing software that we integrated with QuickBooks and a couple other things. I had Hittail, which was a SaaS app that was SEO, and we'd built about 5 or 6 integrations over the course of about maybe 2 years. And so when we launched Drip, it was, you know, in the early days, it was kind of a basic ESP and email service provider. And we realized that one of the competitive advantages could be that we would really easily take in data from a lot of outside sources. And it was sources that were hard to wire up in other platforms or non-existent. We integrated with Stripe early on. We had a really good Zapier integration with a lot of triggers. We integrated with PayPal and Shopify and Gumroad, you know, a bunch of kind of commerce platforms. And so there was a motivation for us both to get the data into Drip, because that made it a you know, like an invaluable resource, and I believe reduced churn. But then there was also the marketing side of it. And there's this term. The first person I ever saw do this was Ruben Gomez with BidSketch, but I started calling it integration marketing. And it's where you build an integration, and then you're able to co-market the integration to your audience, and the integrator is able to promote you to their audience as well. And so all of that, you know, there's the value to your customers is one thing to think about, and then there is the marketing piece of, wow, I'm going to get either a nice email list bump from Zapier or whoever emailing their list, or I'm going to get ongoing traffic from being, you know, listed in their app store.
So we can classify integrations as some of them being sort of giants, let's say Segment or Zapier, and some of them being integrated to your peers. So is there a difference between those?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because I would say Zapier and Segment are not giants. I would say they're middle. I would say the giants are PayPal, Stripe, QuickBooks, you know, where really they probably have a standardized process, and getting a mention from them is probably not going to happen. Maybe you'll get added at like one link in their page, you know, that shows all the integrations. But those ones you do for the value, the customer value, because obviously getting PayPal, Stripe, or QuickBooks data can be valuable to your customers. That middle tier of Segment and Zapier, while they are larger, they're still pretty good about promoting you. At least Zapier is. And frankly, once we integrated with Segment, we had enough customers that they noticed, and they reached out to our, we had a business development guy at the time. They reached out to him and started a good partnership there. So, and Drip wasn't that big at the time. And so those ones we did for both reasons, right? Both promotion and for the value to our customers, our mutual customers. And then the integrating with your peers, that can have, I think you could do either one there, right? I mean, it's, what's nice is if you integrate with your peers, then it's a no-brainer. You guys promote, your audiences probably aren't that large. And it kind of makes sense just to trade it off. The value to your customers, that's where that may be lesser. Because if you have a peer who only has a few hundred customers, and you only have a few hundred customers, and you're in the early stages, then what's the overlap going to be between your tool and their tool? Maybe it's five customers or something. So those are the ones that you have to kind of think about. Is it worth the engineering time to do this if, you know, the value... there may not be a ton of product value to your customers right now, but you can look at it two ways. One, you could look longer term and say, well, over the course of the next year or two, I think as we grow, it makes more sense. And is there enough value purely in the promotion? Is their list big enough? You know, do we have enough, what do you call it? Like synergy, you know, between the two products that the audiences, that it makes sense that we'll get a high, you know, kind of high conversion rate, and we'll get enough trials to kind of warrant building the feature.
Have you ever observed successful, let's say, stacks or pairs of product when they coexist and co-integrate, being not large together, and they get like sold alongside each other? Let's say we decide at UserList to recommend Help Scout as a tool, as a support tool of our choice, and we kind of closely collaborate together and co-integrate tightly. That's very hypothetical, though, but as an example.
That would be a win for UserList, because you're, you know, still at an early stage, right? And they have such a large customer base that getting, if they mentioned you in an email, did a blog post, did an in-app announcement, and added you to their kind of app store or their list of integrations, they, I'm guessing, are driving quite a bit more traffic and have just a larger prospect list and a larger email list than you guys do. So that'd be a big win for you. You would really have to figure out how to get in there. What's the value to them? You know, why would they kind of bother with it? I think one thing we did at Drip was, even when we approached these larger players, we would do all the work. They didn't have to do anything, right? So we would hit their API, we would pull the data in, and then we would approach them and say, we are building this integration. We're going to launch it either way. We'd love to do co-marketing with you. And the list is the four things I mentioned. You know, it's like, you don't have to do all of them, but this is, we would say we're going to do an in-app announcement, a blog post, an email to our list of X thousand, and add you to our list of integrations on the marketing site. Are you willing to do the same? Sometimes there was no response. Sometimes people said absolutely yes. Sometimes people said no, you know, and we kind of weighed that and in prioritizing some of our integrations. Again, integrating with Stripe for us was a no-brainer because all of our customers use Stripe and it was a huge percentage. And it didn't matter if they were going to promote us or not. In the end, we wound up getting onto a page. They had an integrations list and it did well for us. But we would have built that either way. But what you're talking about with Help Scout, that would be one where you'd have to evaluate. Is the value truly there for your customers? Are people asking for it? Or, because if not, you could still build it, but you get that upfront commitment from them of, yes, we are willing to, announce or email our list or whatever.
Let's recap. What's the strategy behind making that decision? Should you integrate or should you not?
I mean, I think there's really probably three things to take into account. One is how much value will this provide to your customer base, to either your customer base today or your customer base over the next 6 months. So existing customer base, will it reduce churn? Second thing is, does having this integration help you market better, right? Assuming that they don't promote you at all, if you integrate with Stripe and Zapier and Segment and PayPal and put those logos on your homepage, or you say, look, just by having these, I will get more trials, I will have more people interested. That could be a second reason to do it. Third reason, of course, is the promotion. That's what I've talked most about, and that's always nice because it just grows your customer base. And as I said, I don't know if I said it on this, but Drip, I believe we built about 30 integrations. It might have been 35 in less than 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a lot. But it worked. We did it because it worked, right? I mean, I would see the bump when people would promote it, when the other company would promote it. Then we would see the ongoing traffic from being listed in all these kind of directories. And I'm not saying this works for every product, but for Drip it did, and for Hittail it did as well. Some worked better than others, but Drip was also, since it was an ESP and a lot of people use it as the hub of their business, it made sense to pull in a lot of data. So it was uniquely designed for that. I mean, I think if you're sending email, there's always, you want more conversion data, you want more customer data, you want purchase data to know what, because that's a type of conversion. There's reasons to build these things. And then I think let's say I wandered off. I said you could, it was to reduce churn, can you market better? Will you get more trials? Will they promote you? And then the last thing to keep in mind or to think about is engineering time. Right. I mean, if it's going to take you 2 weeks to build an integration, that's a lot of time. We got the time down with Drip, where we had an infrastructure, we could build, if someone had a good API, well-documented, we could pull in data from them with about 4 hours of development work. And that was not, fully launched into production. That was someone writing unit tests and tying into our trigger system within Drip. But it was a half day's work to get a very basic integration done. And then typically we would launch a V1 of that and then see if people used it. And then, if they used it and they said, oh, this doesn't do as much as I want, we'd say, great, what else do you want it to do? And then it was almost customer development. They would then say, well, I want it to do this. And then we'd do a V2 that was better. And then with V3, we tended to add like OAuth and, because OAuth always takes a lot longer than you want to implement it. So, a V2 might take us 1 to 2 days, and then V3 might take a full developer week to do it. But by that time, we knew 20% of our customers are using this, and we're getting 30 new trials a month just from the link on the integration page from that app. And so at this point, it makes total sense to really double down on that integration. And then some we launched, and out of thousands of customers, we'd have 20 people use it. And it was like, well, I think we may have a V1 of this one for quite some time, because just no one's interested. So it was a way to kind of double down on the better ones, or the more, not the better ones, but the ones that were more consistent with what our customers wanted.
Do you typically align integrations into your general product roadmap, or do you have like a dedicated integrations track and a dedicated developer who'd work on that?
Oh, that's a good question. We did not have a dedicated track. It was just in the main roadmap and it would just say integrate with XYZ. And obviously, or not obviously, most of the time it would say, V1 integration, Shopify, you know, or V2 integration, whatever. Like, we had that terminology inside the company. We kind of all knew what V1, V2, and V3 meant. V3 was the, you know, again, the top shelf, gold plated, as good as we could build it. And V1 was more of a, hey, get it out quick and see what happens. We did have one developer who, if he was available, built the integrations because he had done so many of them, and he got really good at, he could look at API documentation and say, oh, this is going to be a disaster. You know, he could tell us within 10 minutes of like, yep, this one's going to be tough because he had just done so many of them. But he didn't do, integrations were not his full-time thing. I mean, maybe he did, you know, he did a couple a month. Well, I guess he did a few a month early on. And then as it went on, you know, we built fewer and fewer of them.
We should probably mention here situations when relying on somebody's API is the core of your business. So this is not integration. This is the core of the product, and this is dangerous, right?
Yeah. Platform, right? When you build on a platform. Yeah. And it's often hard to avoid that. I mean, you know, Hittail was an SEO keyword tool. It relied heavily on Google, and Google would accidentally just almost punted into existence every 6 to 12 months. It was terrible. And that was why when I started Drip, I said, look, I'm going to be an email service provider. You know, email is this, you know, platform agnostic and all that. Of course, then you get to the point where it's like, well, we're pretty reliant on Stripe for our billing. Well, we're pretty reliant on SendGrid and Mandrill for our email sending. You know, we're pretty reliant. You do become reliant on tools. But it, you know, as long as there's alternatives, that's the thing, right? If it's a back-end tool like a SendGrid that's sending your email, even if they kicked you off or went out of business, there are a bunch of alternatives. It would be super painful to convert over. It might be a month's worth of work, but it's possible. But what you're talking about is if you built a Twitter client, mm-hmm. and then Twitter shuts their API off like they did, and they put companies out of business. Facebook has done this too, and Google, right? When they change their APIs or they change their policies, and yeah, it can be dangerous. And you're right. I don't consider those integrations. You know, integrations are things that augment your existing app by tying into another tool that someone else uses. And that, here's another thing. What's interesting is we used to get emails that would say, do you integrate or can you integrate with, I'm trying to think of a tool like, you know, Pipedrive, which is a CRM system. And we would say, because we did build a Pipedrive integration and it wound up being really good for us. But before we did, we would say, we don't, but what do you mean by integrate with? Like, do you want our emails to be automatically BCC'd to Pipedrive? Do you want when you move a Pipedrive, you know, a customer from one or a prospect from one phase to the next, that it pings out to Drip? Or do you want Drip to be able to ping out and add a new prospect for, you know, I mean, there's like 20 different things you could do. So that's where like integration is in the eye of the beholder. And that's where individual customers will have different desires or needs of what they want to do. And that's where talking to them to get a better idea of actually what they want, instead of just going off and building it, is, you know, it's helpful because you can actually build what the customers need. A real danger here is with Zapier, because Zapier, I like Zapier, I like what they're doing, and we had great success and they were a good partner of ours. But our V1 Zapier integration was not all 50 triggers and 50, what did we call them? I can't even remember anymore. It was triggers, input and output. Yeah, it's basically data coming in and out. And we did not build all 50 of those into Zapier. You could do that pretty easily, but it would take forever, right? We built, you know, maybe let's say 5 to 10 triggers and then rolled it out and then, you know, sat and watched to see if people asked for more on that.
There are two questions that kind of tie one into another. So one is there any maintenance associated with the integrations that you build? And have you ever killed one based on that?
Ooh, good questions. Yes, there's maintenance. We had a Facebook ads integration where we could, you know, within Drip, someone would go in workflow and then it would put them into a custom audience, right, for Facebook ads. Facebook just wrecks their API like every 6 months, maybe. I mean, just changes it up and changes it, no backwards compatibility. And it's like, you're going to be not, and we'd get an email and it's like, you have 10 days to upgrade or your whole thing's going to be not going to work. And we were always like, how are they this big in doing that? You know, whereas someone like Zapier or Segment or, you know, a lot of basically most of the other integrations we did, we built them once and they didn't change their API. And we really didn't have, there wasn't a ton of maintenance. The hardest part is support, right? When someone's trying to get it to go back and forth and they can't get the data to go, and they don't know who to email, right? So they would email us, we'd troubleshoot it and then be like, well, we're sending the right data. So then we'd CC their support and hope that they could fix it. That was always the tough part, because you want to be able to solve your customers' problems. And when you can't, and it's a black box of another system, that's definitely, it's a challenge, and it's just one you have to deal with. It helps if you have a good relationship, you know, between the companies.
So it's not primarily engineering, but the support burden, that's troublesome.
I wouldn't even say it's troublesome. It's just a kind of a cost of doing business. You know, it's the cost that, I mean, some of these integrations were sending us 30, 40, 50 trials a month. Just by, you know, the fact that we had a lot of people who wanted to use them. So that, to me, that's worth getting some support emails, you know? So it wasn't troublesome as much as it was just a thing that we needed to be aware of. There were some integrations that we've started to build or thought about building, and the API was so bad that we just pulled the plug and never launched it. We just didn't think it was going to be reliable, and we thought it was going to be too much of a headache to support. And then your other question was, did we ever shut one down? And we never did for technical reasons. It was only strategic product reasons. You know, like, we aren't going to keep support. Like, early on, we integrated with MailChimp and AWeber, and you could like pipe drip customer. This is before we were a full blown ESP. And, you know, we could pipe things into those two companies and then those two apps. And then at a certain point, that just didn't make sense, right? Why would we? I mean, they were essentially competitors. So we sunsetted those. We didn't let new people activate them. And if you already had it, you could still do it. But that was not a technical issue. I can't think of any other ones that we shut down any others that we backed off.
Let's talk a bit about my promotion. You mentioned there are four things that you could do together with your co-marketer with another platform. Could you elaborate a little bit on those?
Yeah, there's four things that we focused on. And then there's a fifth that I'll mention that's interesting. And I've seen it done well. The four things are, and again, we would put this in the email or in the conversation if we were kind of having that integration, the business development conversation, but we'd say, hey, look, we can write a blog post about the integration. We will email our list. Sometimes it's a dedicated email if it's a big integration. If it's a smaller one, we might put it, you know, in the feature announcement email that we send every month as one bullet item. So that was the email. Certainly we'll tweet out the blog post. We will do an in-app announcement, and we will add it to our integrations directory. And then we would ask them, can you do those things as well? And sometimes they could do three of the four, and that was fine. But each of those, you know, gets you a different bump. I mean, to be honest, the most valuable of those is the email to their list. And we would actually say we have, whatever, 20,000 subscribers. And we would ask how many they had. And as long as it was within the ballpark, it seemed like an even trade. The fifth thing that I didn't mention that's interesting is, let's say you integrated with, Pipedrive or Basecamp. If you got permission from them to use their logo or use a screenshot in an ad, you can market to their users on, let's say, Facebook, maybe LinkedIn, but Facebook for sure, right? You can look for Basecamp users. And you know, you can say, my app plus Basecamp integration just went live. Come try it out or whatever, right? To run kind of a little targeted campaign. And I didn't come up with that one. I believe Ruben also came up with that one years ago. And you know, some of those will work. We didn't do that with Drip. And frankly, I don't remember why not. It was probably a resource issue of like trying to get those. I mean, setting up ads is non-trivial, right? You need to get the copy and then the artwork, and then you need the budget and you need to manage it and stuff. But it's if there's a big enough user base and you can find them on Facebook, it's definitely, that's less of a promotion that they're doing for you, right? That, you know, that's not the other party, the integrator, doing for you, but it is kind of an excuse or a reason to be able to reach out to their audience. And again, get permission before you do that, right? Don't just go use their logo without asking.
To recap, I would love to say that this idea of saying the things that you will do and kind of asking for the same, it meets so many goals at once. First, you show that you're going to do the work on your side. And that's always easier to say yes in return. And then you're aligning expectations 100%, which is almost never the case if you just, you know, do cold outreach.
Yeah, that's right. And having a process down to where you have the email template, your developer knows how to build it. You know, it's not a cold start each time where it's this custom process. That makes it easier. The first couple you do will take longer. But if you decide that this is something that you think your app can really be a hub for data, or that it really needs to go out, you know, and touch a lot of apps that your users, your customers are using, then trying to develop this into a better, more repeatable process, make it more efficient, you know, is a big deal.
Before we wrap up today's episode, could you maybe recap top three mistakes that you did early on and that you didn't do later that people should avoid during the integrations?
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, we did some where we built it and we didn't reach out in advance to try to kind of get a co-marketing commitment. So then we really didn't get much co-marketing with them. We did build a couple where the APIs were kind of janky and they wound up being hard to support. I think those are probably the biggest two, was like adding to our support burden or not getting the bump. I mean, I guess there were a couple that we built where they promoted us and we just didn't get many trials from it. So it wound up kind of being a waste of time other than the value it provided, you know, directly to our customers. So I don't know, you kind of live and learn.
Could there be any process that people could follow in figuring out who to integrate with? So one is listening to your customers, but is there like proactive research you can do?
Oh, definitely. Right. I mean, you could look at competitors and try to compile a list of all those integrations. I believe when we started, we didn't really look at competitors. We looked at I knew a bunch of our early customers, and I kind of asked them, what tools do you use? I proactively reached out, and everyone was like, well, Stripe, and some people were doing e-commerce stuff. Some people were doing like Gumroad and SendOwl. There were all these tools that came up, and I was trying to cobble together a list of which of these do I think would co-promote with us, you know, which are kind of in our community, and which do I think would be most valuable moving forward based on our vision of the product that the most people would use over the over the coming year. Because this was really early on, right? Imagine we had 50 customers. So any integration we launched wasn't going to be used by that many people. But I, given the trajectory of the product, we kind of had to make some guesses there.
Did you get any process for documenting it, like putting up your own docs, getting into their docs, any kind of, recommendations about the craftsmanship of the product?
Yeah, that's a good point. We'd always wrote a KB article for the integrations, and that was partly to rank in Google, but also partly because you really want a nice KB article that, you know, that kind of describes it. By the time we really got rolling on integrations, we did build an integration guide, a drip integration guide. And this is not something you're going to do right off the bat. But at the time, we then, this is when we had people building integrations to pipe into us and building integrations to take data out of us. So they started coming to integrate with us. And we had pretty in-depth guide. It may still be on the drip website somewhere. The reason we did that is because people were building poor integrations and they weren't using the right endpoints and they were sending people into campaigns instead of sending them into the main list. And so we would start rejecting. We'd basically say, we're not going to list you in our integrations guide, and we're not going to promote you, and we're not going to put a native trigger inside the app if you don't follow these guidelines. And it wasn't to be punitive. It was to make sure that the customer experience made sense, to our mutual customers, and that it was that you could pump someone into a workflow pretty easily, which is where most people wanted them to go. So, but again, that's further down the line for most people, I think. Once other people are emailing you asking to integrate, that's a good problem to have.
So the integration guide, was it like a separate website or did it live on your KB?
It was a page on the marketing website.
Uh-huh.
And I believe it might even have had it was kind of like building a drip integration. And it had a couple questions, and it was like, are you going to pump data into us or pull data out of us? And then it emailed our business development guy, who would follow up with them on a call. And I don't know if we published the in and out docs right there on the page or if he would give them to him. I honestly forget. But it was that was a good way to go. It was helpful to have better integrations because, man, it was tough when people would build integrations and our customers would email us and email support and say, this one integration doesn't allow me to get people into a workflow. How do I do that? And we're like, I don't know. We didn't build it. You know, like it's not our thing. I mean, it's a weird place to be in when, you know, you can't do it. So then you're emailing that company saying, you need to get a developer. You need to update your integration, deprecate this way. I mean, who does that? You know, some people just ignored us, which was, you know, which wasn't great.
Thank you for all your insights, Rob. This was very helpful. And I hope it helps our listeners build productive and prolific and profitable integrations for their SaaS products.
Me as well. It's my pleasure.
So where can people find you personally online and your products and the projects you're involved with?
If you're listening to this and you like podcasts, you should come check out my weekly podcast, startupsfortherestofus.com or Startups for the Rest of Us in iTunes. And then I'm at robwalling.com. That's where I post all my notes and my thoughts and my essays and have links to everything I'm up to.
Are you like episode, how many hundreds of the podcast?
448.
Amazing. So you're getting close to a small, small round number.
I know. I know. Yeah, 500 will be a trip. Yeah.
Well, thanks again for your time, Rob, and all the insights. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of the week.
You as well. Thanks for having me on.